Hello again, and welcome to Content Talks, a 5x5 podcast that explores the ever-evolving world of content strategy. Every week, we feature conversations between me, Christina Halverson, and some of my favorite people who are talking about content strategy or important things related to it. Today, I am thrilled to have a very important guest. It's Lou Rosenfeld. Hi, Lou.
Hi, Christina.
I'm going to tell our listening audience a little bit about you. Louis Rosenfeld is an independent information architecture consultant for Fortune 500 corporations and other large organizations. He's the founder and publisher of Rosenfeld Media, a publishing house focused on user experience books. He is the co-author of Information Architecture for the World Wide Web, also known as the Polar Bear Book, and the forthcoming Search Analytics for Your Site. He's the co-founder of the Information Architecture Institute. He is a former columnist for Internet World, CIO, and Web Review. Lou, you have been very busy for your short, young life.
I'm much older than you think, Christina. And by the way, I'm even more thrilled than you are.
Aw, how nice. I'll pay you the $20 later for saying that. Lou, tell me what you've been up to lately. As we were getting set up and ready to go, you told me you're in a new co-working space now. What kind of work are you doing in that co-working space?
Well, I'm doing a lot of writing. I've been working on, I want to call it a stupid book, but it's turning out to be a decent book at least. But for about 6 years on and off, I've been working on this new book on site search analytics. And I'm nearing the finish line, thank goodness. So I'm trying to get it done before I hit the road for about something like 11 talks between now and June 3rd.
11. Are there even 11 weeks between now and June 3rd?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
But I'm not even thinking about those. I guess I'd better because I will need to have something to say. But
I never think about my talks until the plane ride over.
Yeah, but you're good at giving them. but I'm really focusing on this book right now. I think it'll probably be interesting to content strategists. Really, the book is about analyzing what people are searching on your site. So we're not talking about web search, but site search. And there's just this huge trove of data that people are sitting on that has, I really think, unbelievable value because it's sort of like the best of both worlds. It's quantitative data. I mean, there's tons of it. It's generated not in a lab environment, but it's actual real user data, it's behavioral data, and it's people telling you what they want from you and your organization and its site in their own words. So it's really it's a lot like a lot of other web analytics data. However, it's far more semantically rich than other analytics data, which makes it really interesting to not just web analytics people, but to the kind of more traditional user research coming out of the social sciences backgrounds that a lot of us in the UX community are. So I think it's weird. It's sort of like it should be like this love child that everyone loves, this child of web analytics and user experience, but it's actually been more of an orphan for years and years, and I want to change that with this book and kind of set up site search analytics in its rightful place in the pantheon of user research methods that both fields use.
It's so funny because it seems like such a forehead slapper, right?
Exactly. And I'm hoping that's what a lot of people do once the book comes out.
Yeah, well, that was sort of what I expected and ended up sort of happening when Content Strategy for the Web came out. It was just sort of one of those things that's been sitting there in front of people and just no one's been talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah. When are you hoping that book will come out?
Well, let's see. I would imagine it'll be out around May for my birthday.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Confab is happening in May. May 9th.
I know. It would be nice to be there
It would be nice it would be really nice to have your book there. I know that you're not able to be there because you're going to be in Lisbon at UX Lisbon.
That's not stopping you.
It's not stopping me, but that was a little bit of a commitment / scheduling snafu that happened. We'll talk about that later.
Okay, we'll talk in Lisbon.
I'll survive. I have no speaking gigs between then and August. I guess I have one short one, but anyway, we're not here to talk about me and my speaking gigs. I had one other question. Oh, I want to talk a little bit more quickly about search site analytics. Say it for me, please.
Close enough. Site search analytics.
Site search analytics. Thank you. Because one thing that always sort of people just sort of stop and stare at me is when I point out to them, you know, yeah, SEO is really important and that's great. But, you know, when people get to your site, if your content sucks, they're going to leave no matter how much, you know, how high you ranked in the search engines. This is something that also has occurred to me that I talk to people about. So many internal site search engines are just completely broken. And it's not mm-hmm. even because of the engine. It's because of the poor, poor tagging and lack of any sort of metadata schema that exists. Can you talk a little bit about that and why that does not get sort of the attention it probably deserves in corporations?
Sure, because there really is no feedback loop in place. So an organization has a search engine. And because it's a piece of technology, like a CMS, for example, they just think those things are the purview of the IT people, and the IT people do a great job in the way that IT people do it. They make sure these systems are up and running, and they're not really focused on what these systems are actually there to do, which is ultimately to improve the user's experience.
Exactly.
So there's no feedback loop to really see how well things are working. And the beauty of site search analytics is that it is essentially the connector. It's that piece of the feedback loop where you actually can not only look at a profile essentially of what people want from you, but then start digging in and seeing how well you're performing. So some of the problems are generally going to be at least somewhat related to the way the search engine is configured, and for example, how you present search results and how wide your box is. Those are all things that site search analytics can help you tune, but there's going to certainly be other issues like how good your content is, how well it's tagged, how well it is titled. Now, a lot of organizations have lots of guidelines to help content authors and editors and so forth handle that stuff. But you and I know that those guidelines aren't often followed. It's really hard to enforce. Enforcement or compulsion is usually not a good approach anyway. So if you have, again, a feedback loop where you can go to your content authors, go to your content editors and say, your content is really failing in the marketplace of the information that makes up our website. Look, it should be ranked number one or two for this very, very common search query, and yet it's not even on the third page of results. Now your content owner is going to say, is that because I didn't follow those titling guidelines? Oh, you mean when I tag my content, I should do it in a more specific way than saying HR? So that's the kind of feedback loop that we can help close, not just on behalf of the users, but to get the content owners into the process as well.
Now, talk to me a little bit, because this all, of course, sounds like content nirvana, which I love talking about content nirvana. In my head, I live there all day, every day. But talk to me about, from an organizational design perspective, who would be responsible for overseeing that? Like, where within those teams, where is that oversight? Where is that governance? Who is sort of getting to call the shots with regard to how things are being tagged, what the metadata attributes are, et cetera?
Well, it obviously it depends on the organization. I mean, a lot of the stuff I'm talking about is often what an information architect might do. But believe it or not, I'm not exactly wedded to that term. I mean, there's a role that you just described that I think is information architecture. But a lot of it bleeds into things like knowledge management. A lot of it might bleed into content management and content strategy and so forth. I think the key thing is get organizations to see that it's not simply an IT challenge, because the IT aspect of it is, I think, ultimately a very small part of what you're trying to do with any technology that's touching information inside the enterprise. So I'm not sure I'm answering your question, but I guess I'm not so concerned what you call that person, but that you make sure that role isn't seen as a technical role.
I think that answers my question exactly.
Okay. I mean, you know, look, I mean, the problem is that the people who run large organizations call their technology chiefs CIOs when they're really CTOs. And there's not really been a true transformation from, well, let me put it to you this way. When you talk about IT, the emphasis has always been on the T. And we're just starting to make headway in rebalancing that. But ultimately, I think it's going to be a different type of person other than a technologist who takes the lead in the type of things you're talking about.
I'm kind of bouncing up and down on my chair with glee hearing you say all that. And I've never heard anybody put it that way, that when we've talked about IT in the past, the focus has been on the technology. You know, some people are saying, oh, well, we have chief technology officers, we have chief marketing officers, we should really have a chief content officer who is sort of overseeing the content lifecycle at, you know, where content exists as a business asset.
Well, exactly. And I mean, I'm not surprised you feel that way, because I think, you know, as much as I understand about what content strategy is really about, and I know we're still figuring that out to some degree, I think it's ultimately, to some degree, a reaction to what happened in the content management world, where the agenda got pretty much flooded or taken over by the vendors and their huge marketing budgets and their ability to wield control over conference agendas and so forth. So I like to think that you guys are, to some degree, a reaction to that, to say, hey, you know, it's not about having the right CMS in place or even the right document management system in place. It's about making our content work for people, because that's what it's there for. Not necessarily even the people who own it and manage it, but the people who ultimately use it.
You know, what's interesting is that the idea of content strategy, the message about content strategy, first has really taken hold of the UX community. I mean, these are the folks that are coming forward and saying, we're sick of trying to design user experiences for really lousy content. It can't really, at the end of the day, be done. And so these are the folks that are saying, where can content strategy as a discipline fit into the user experience design process? One thing that I wanted to ask you about, you wrote an article about a year ago, I think, sort of an open letter to the content strategy community. As you were starting to see user experience design teams start to talk about content strategy and request the participation of a content strategist, you had some sort of ideas and thoughts and warnings almost for the content strategy community. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, first I'll just say that it's not a surprise that UX people are very interested in content strategy, because it's certainly a design challenge. And I'm using the word design with a small d, but it's also in the nature of a lot of people in UX to be naturally prone to sense or identify gaps in practice and to try to fill them. And so I think the reason a lot of us are in the field that we're in is simply we just see things that need to get done that nobody's doing, and we try to map those spaces out and give them a vocabulary and a label for the overall practice. And so it's no surprise at all. But what I had written to the community a year or so ago was really more thinking about how the community's leadership goes about organizing the community and leading the community. So I was in a similar role in the information architecture community 10 years ago or thereabouts. And I helped get the IA Summit, which we're, I guess, coming up on number 12 now, off the ground the first 2-3 years. With the cooperation of the American Society for Information Science and Technology, which is a very academic and traditional professional association. And it's been a wonderful relationship in many respects, but it's not a natural relationship. And it's starting to actually, I think, and to some degree, make it difficult for the IA Summit to flourish. So a couple years into that relationship, I saw the need for the IA community to really have its own organization of some sort. And Christina Witke and I launched the Information Architecture Institute with, at least we got the idea going, and there was actually a bunch of us that actually did the work of launching it. Where am I going with all this? I think I keep finding the need to react to traditional models of doing things. So I felt that ACIST wasn't necessarily the right home for this community. And after a while, I started feeling that the IA Institute wasn't even the right kind of home for the IA community. And I think a lot of it was because the IA Institute sort of went in a direction of saying that it was a professional association. And when you call yourself a professional association, you start adapting you start wearing the clothing of a traditional professional association, for better or for worse. So because it was familiar and understandable, a certain type of organization started to coalesce that didn't necessarily meet the needs of the community. And this is all easy for me to talk about in hindsight, but what I wanted to recommend to you folks was that you look to really nail what the need was for whatever you were going to put together, some sort of organization of sorts. And to be careful and really wary of using existing metaphors and models for organizing yourselves. I mean, I think, you know, professional associations like traditional publishing models are really of maybe the 19th century and shouldn't really be looked to for things happening in the 21st century.
Can you, I think this is such an interesting conversation for me because I've been approached by a few folks saying, hey, we should really start a national content strategy association or an international content strategy association. And I was the president of a local interactive marketing association here mm-hmm. in Minneapolis for a couple of years, and it was involved for 6 years. And that was a community that did not exist prior to kind of formalizing the association. And over the years, we've been able to build it to the point that, you know, it's got like 1,400 members and it has really become this amazing hub of information and knowledge share that is attracting really great talent to come and speak to the community from all over the country. And so that was really necessary. But when I look at what's happening with the content strategy community right now, I just don't know if I see a need at the moment for some kind of association. Can you talk a little bit about
sure.
why you identified that need and what you think did kind of help or what it did offer to the community at the time?
Well, first of all, I just want to say your experience, was it MIMA?
Yeah, it was MIMA, the Minnesota Interactive Marketing Association.
I think the key part of that is that it is the word Minnesota. I mean, I think the fact that you were regional or local makes things a lot more logical in terms of organizing people because there's the face-to-face aspect of it that generates a lot of energy and makes a lot of other things possible.
Exactly.
That are really hard to do on a national or especially a global basis. But I guess, you know, and I'm glad to hear you say that you weren't sure that there was necessarily a need for a national association. I think the problem is associations aren't necessarily very good at being nimble to really evolve with the sort of life cycle of the community. So you guys are at a certain point now. The people who are really active in the content strategy world are going to be a very different kind of person who may have been educated quite differently and maybe more formally and are going to have a different role in their organizations in 5 years than they are today. I can promise you that. And the associations are like academic programs. They lag pretty drastically at keeping up with the needs of the community. So I guess just like I hate to say it, I'm a big fan of banning certain words. Like my big hobby horse right now is banning the word redesign when I'm working with clients. I actually think it's pretty useful because redesign is a kind of nasty crutch that gets in the way of actually solving real problems. If you guys, the content strategists, were going to get together and ban the use of terms like professional association and member, which have all kinds of baggage, and think about using terms that are language that's really more about need and interest and engagement, you might come up with a very different idea of how you might get together and what it might be. So one model would be kind of like, in a way, the IXDA has become, which is the main thing is they put on a really good annual event. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff. I'm not trying to underplay what else they do. But if they didn't have the annual conference, I'm not sure what else there would be to kind of hold them together. So, you know, a model is you put on an event every year and bring everyone together, and the event is more important than the organization behind it. The other model would be you have people who are really smart in your community, and you want to make sure they can do really good things to serve the community. But what gets in their way is infrastructure. So there may be things like as basic as the infrastructure to support them managing their files collectively and being on conference calls. So maybe an organization that can get a GoToMeeting account and a Basecamp account would help. Maybe another piece of infrastructure is legal and IP. So when someone does really good stuff, builds a knowledge base or a body of knowledge on behalf of the community, there needs to be someone who owns it on behalf of the community. That's another piece of infrastructure that an organization can provide. So you could be in the sort of model of creating infrastructure that allows community members to do really cool things on behalf of the community. That's not necessarily what a professional association is. And if you start thinking about professional association, you probably close off the ability to execute on either of those two other possible models I just described effectively.
You know, as I'm sitting here listening to you, I've been thinking about all the different ways in which the community has been coming together and sharing knowledge and kind of building this body of knowledge really from all over the world. And I'm realizing that the tools that we're using to do that simply didn't exist 10 or 11 years ago. I mean, we have Meetup where, you know, there are something like 50 content strategy meetups happening all over the world and another 100 people waiting for something to happen.
Right.
And that has just come up organically. We have Twitter where we've been able to find each other really quickly and network to create this online community. We have LinkedIn for content strategy groups. We have Flickr where we can share these infographics. So that all has really sort of served a lot of the purposes that you just described. I will say another thing is that something I've been very, very impressed by within the emerging community is that knowledge share is just kind of assumed. Like we're just giving stuff away to each other, saying, you know, we need to work together to figure out what's working, what's not, because the discipline is evolving at such a fast rate.
That's not going to happen for much longer is my prediction, I'm sorry to say.
No, but that's great. Talk to me about that.
Well, I mean, you're at a certain point where you have certain people who have maybe toiled in solitude doing this type of work for a long time, and now there's a language and a name for it all and other common things, events and so forth, that they're not alone anymore. And, you know, it's like, oh, thank goodness. And the nature of people like yourself is also you're going to share because you want to push things forward. You're pioneers. And I guess that's my point is in 5 years, the bulk of the community won't be those pioneers any longer. And even if that wasn't the case, the people who are sort of the communal entrepreneurs will have moved on to something else. And I mean, look, Karen McGrain, she was involved early in the IA community, and now she's involved in the content strategy community, and she'll probably be involved in something else in 5 years. So there's certain types of people at certain points in the life cycle of a community of practice. And I think an organization that is nimble and flexible and can evolve as that community changes is really pretty important. The other thing I want to just sort of throw out there is that, you know, traditional models were simple because the offerings of those organizations were simple. So think of all the things you just mentioned, all the ways that people can engage with each other within this community. Now think of the professional association model. Typically, there's a very limited number of ways that people engage. And in the IAI, I was, I guess, the first treasurer, and I had to make sure that people were getting money or paying money to be members. That was our basic model of engagement. You pay your $40 a year, and you are now a member. To me, looking back on it, it was such a mistake because, first of all, it created like this consumerist view of what the organization was about. And I can't tell you how many times people would say, I'm paying $40 a year and all I'm getting is, and you know, we would argue you're getting a lot, but the point was they had sort of an understanding of what membership meant. Membership meant I pay money and I get stuff back and I don't necessarily engage. Now you might want to support that as one of many, many, many ways to engage. Think of that as the outer layer of an onion layer model of engagement, and make sure you're supporting other ways that people are likely to want to engage with other people in the community, depending on partly on where they are in their own career life cycle and partly depending on the community's own life cycle.
Well, and what I'm wondering, though, is with all of the tools that we have today, with all of the ways that people are already engaging, it'll be right now, I don't see what else a national or international association could offer practitioners that they're not already getting either online or in their local communities. But I hear what you're saying that, you know, as the practice evolves and as more and more people become involved with it, that level of sharing you think is going to really drop significantly.
Well, and also it's going to be picked up by things like academia. I'm going to want to get my master's degree in content strategy at some point, and I'll go to University of Minnesota or somewhere like that and get that. And that's the kind of place I'll expect the knowledge sharing to come from, because that's how I learned how to do other things. So, that's when, some of the traditional models of knowledge sharing are going to start eating away to some degree at what you're doing now. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be the, person in the corner of the party going, wait, where are you guys going? This is, it's been so exciting for me to see the community just sort of explode as of late and to watch conversation about content strategy just take off. I will say one thing that I have had to fight is the urge every single time somebody uses the phrase content strategy to mean a Twitter feed or how many articles are you going to post on your website, to fight the urge to go, that's not what that is. But, to your point, people are going to take the term and kind of adapt it within their own framework of understanding and run with it from there.
And you know what? There's a lot of sad things for I guess I'm talking like you as someone who's been in something of a cutting edge role in a community, is when terms like content strategy or information architecture lose their luster. And, it's sort of a bummer. Enjoy it. Enjoy
it. Why hasn't the term user experience designer, why hasn't that lost its luster?
Because it's not been associated with, it's not pinned down. And I don't think it ought to be, frankly. It's not a term I love personally, but it's a good umbrella for things like information architecture and interaction design and so on. And those terms are the actual practices. And I think what happens is practices get boring after a while. I think to a lot of people who sort of seek out the most exciting, new, and maybe best paying types of work, yesterday's information architecture is today's interaction design, is maybe tomorrow's content strategy, and who knows what's around the bend after that.
And see, I've really been thinking about and talking about content strategy more on the level of user experience design, because for me, content strategy is not just a role that plugs into that user experience design team. This is something that has purview into so many other areas of the organization and really does, like user experience, back into organizational design. I mean, if you embrace content strategy as a way of creating and delivering and governing your content over time, that's going to require more than just a project team. That requires changes organization-wide. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if I agree with you that the term will necessarily lose its luster. I think it's going to be considered more of a practice that needs to be examined, from an organizational perspective and not just from a project.
Well, I agree with you, but I think the parallels are there with other areas. And of course, my direct experience is information architecture, and I think there's a very strong parallel between the two so far, at least in how they've developed. But I agree with you that so much of all this work is going to come down to the organizational level, and I love to hear you using words like, I forget, you're using process or tuning or what have you, but that this kind of work is going to happen over time. It's not going to go away. That's actually what I'm teaching in my new adaptable information architecture workshop.
And oh yes, the workshop. Tell me about the workshop.
Well, I'm pulling together a bunch of things, partly in response or reaction to what I see with a lot of my clients, which is an endless redesign cycle. And as I said earlier, I try to get them to not even use that term because it doesn't have any meaning. And I just see so many organizations wasting so much money doing either cosmetic changes to large enterprise environments, or, well, you know, it's broken, so let's get an enterprise class application to fix everything, because the vendors' marketers told us that, you know, this new CMS or this new search engine or what have you is going to fix everything. So what I see, certainly from the IA side of things, is that there often are small but important and highly valuable ways that you can make changes that have a much better impact than any redesign ever will. Because instead of redesigning every 3 years, there's little tweaks that you can make. If you can really prioritize and understand what users' actual needs are and nail the hell out of them and do that on an ongoing basis, the outcome of this small investment of work is unbelievably huge. I always trot out the ZIF distribution, which doesn't really work very well on a podcast, but basically it's a curve that shows you that a little bit goes a long way. So a handful of your common search queries account for a huge volume of all your search activity, and then there's a drop-off into the long tail. A handful of your documents account for a huge amount of all your usage of your content. So, in fact, maybe you can even tell me where I heard this, because I'd like to find the citation, but I heard something last year that something like 90% of all the Microsoft.com documents have never even been accessed once. So, you know, this idea of figuring out the stuff that does matter and nailing it and doing so on a regular basis because things change, to me, is the way to go. And that's what I'm trying to nail in this workshop.
I would like to send people from Brain Traffic to that workshop.
Cut you a great deal.
Okay. Can you tell me where you're going to be teaching it?
Yep. We are going to be in first of all, is me and Steve Krug, who's doing his do-it-yourself usability workshop, which is based on his new book, his excellent new book. And we're going to have a third person in each of the three cities as a local, well, not really a local, but a guest. So in March 23rd to 25th, Steve and Indy Young, who's one of the Rosenfeld Media authors for the book on mental models, and I will be teaching in San Francisco. Then April, I believe it's 27th through the 29th, Steve and Whitney Quisenberry and I will be teaching in Atlanta, and Whitney's going to be doing her workshop on storytelling, which is another Rosenfeld Media book. And then June 1st through 3rd will be in Chicago along with Ginny Reddish, who will be teaching her workshop on letting go of the words, which, as you know, is just a fantastic workshop.
Well, now I want to send my people to all three of those.
Fantastic.
You've confused me. Hey, where can I find more information and register for these workshops?
Well, Steve and I are on the phone around midnight last night for about an hour as he struggles through Eventbrite, and he assured me he was pretty close to having it ready, but it's not. So okay. I think Monday it should be up, but for now, what you can do is go to my website and monitor that. I will definitely announce it there, and that's Louis Rosenfeld, LouisRosenfeld.com, or follow my Twitter ID, which is at Louis Rosenfeld, and I will be very sure to let people know in those two places when the information is up.
Excellent. Well, I will share that information as well wherever I can, because those workshops sound like a dream to me. Hey, Lou, we are just about out of time, so I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Content Talks. This has been an incredibly valuable conversation for me, and hopefully to our listeners. So thanks so much for taking the time.
Are you kidding? Thank you.
And good luck on your crazy 11-city world tour. Are you going to have groupies following you around?
Oh, they were promised, so we'll see.
All right. Well, thanks so much. And thank you, kind listener, for tuning in. We will see you on the next episode of Content Talks.